to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Sairam, dear listeners, a very good morning to all of you and a warm welcome to today's Thursday Live. I am Raghu from Team Media Sai, hosting the segment Morning Glory. Well, at the very outset, dear listeners, let us all offer our most loving, humble, prayerful and ever grateful pranams at the lotus feet of the voice and the listener of Radio Sai Global Harmony, who is Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Dear listeners, you are tuned to Asia Stream of Radio Sai Global Harmony. Today is 24th of July 2017 and the time right now in our studio is 9:40 a.m. IST, Indian Standard Time. And the weather and climate right now in the Prashant Nilayam is very pleasant. It's a sunny day here at the ashram. In fact, a sunny morning, a beautiful sunny morning. Right now, the Vedam chanting session and bhajan session just concluded in Sai Kulant Hall at 9:30 after the Mangala Arati. And right now, many Swami's devotees have lined up in Sai Kulant Hall to offer their pranams to Bhagwan's Mahasamadhi. Well, dear listeners, most of you must be aware that there are six streams in Radio Sai. The Asia stream, through which you are listening to right now, Afri stream, Ameri stream, Bhajan stream, the stream through which you can listen to Swami's Bhajan, Prashanti Mandir Bhajan 24 hours a day, and then the discourse stream, the stream through which you can listen to Swami's Divine Discourse in Swami's voice 24/7, and there is one more sixth stream which most of you, all of you are aware of, which is the Telugu stream. And this month on 21st and 22nd, that is last weekend, Radio Sai Telugu stream celebrated its 6th anniversary. That is, the Telugu stream started in 2011 and it's been 6 years, and on 21st and 22nd, Radio Sai Telugu stream celebrated its 6th anniversary celebrations here at Radio Sai with a 2-day live broadcast from the studios of Radio Sai. About 46 programs in Telugu were aired on this 2-day live broadcast. Yes, 46 program. A total of about 230 participants were there, which included 150 children from 8 districts of Andhra Pradesh and Telangana states of India, which included 8 elders from various fields. Well, in this 2-day live program, which was on 21st and 22nd, the first day was dedicated only for children. So all the live broadcasts in Telugu, which was broadcast on 21st, were done by children's from Balvikas, from the states of Andhra Pradesh. So the 46 programs were aired, and these programs included many, like talks, interviews, discussions, quiz program, Antakshari program, drama, audio drama, music, and Burakata presentation, and much more. And these programs were based on the themes: culture is concern for others, 3 steps to attain divinity, bend the body, mend the senses, and end the mind. So dear listeners, in case you have missed these programs, and if you are a Telugu listener, you can listen to it again from our website, radiosai.org. They are there for the downloads, and your listening pleasure at your leisure. Well, today in the segment of Morning Glory, I'll be playing for you an episode of our radio series Tryst with Divinity. Well, today's conversation is with a Sai devotee couple, and it's in 2 parts. So today you listen to part 1 of the conversation, and this part 1 of the conversation is about 1 hour long, and so I'll be playing the file right now. In conversation with them is Radio Sai's Karuna Munshi. And after 1 hour, that is at about 10:45, I'll be back and I will play a few bhajans for 15 minutes till 11. And these bhajans will be the bhajans which has been requested by a few listeners. In fact, I've got bhajan requests from dozens of listeners, and today I'll be having around 15 minutes before we finish the segment Morning Glory. So during this 15 minutes, I'll play about 4 bhajans from listeners' requests. So stay tuned, dear listeners. Let's listen to this conversation, and on the other end of the conversation, I'll be back playing the bhajans.
Sairam, dear listeners, welcome to Tris with Divinity with the power couple from the USA. And by power, I mean Sai Power. My guest today, that is on the 6th of March 2017, are Lakshmi and Paddy Padmanabhan. Lakshmi Padmanabhan is an ardent devotee of Sri Satya Sai Baba and has been living in the US since 1980. She has over 20 years of business leadership and executive experience in the areas of accounting and financial management. In her last job prior to retirement a few years ago, Lakshmi served as a program finance manager at Raytheon, one of the largest defense contracting firms in the US. She received an MBA degree from Indiana University in the US and a master's in economics from Madras University in India. Lakshmi is a very active community service volunteer and supports numerous local and national service organizations, and her involvement in the Sai organization activities is central to her life's purpose. Today, Lakshmi is accompanied by her husband, Mr. Paddy Padmanabhan, who has been also living in the US since 1976. Professionally, Mr. Padmanabhan has over 35 years of executive management, strategy consulting, and postgraduate teaching experience. Currently, Paddy Padmanabhan is the president and CEO of MyScript, a world leader in handwriting recognition and digital ink technology. He also serves on the board of 3 high technology companies. Prior to MyScript, he has also served as a managing director in a global private equity company, North American practice leader for the commercial advisory practice at Ernst & Young, and as director and principal consultant in the strategy consulting program and transaction advisory practice at PricewaterhouseCoopers. Mr. Padmanabhan has also been the adjunct professor for 12 years at the Graduate School of Business, Indiana University, where he taught graduate courses in corporate finance and business policy in the MBA program. Closer to home, he is associated with the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning as a visiting faculty and has taught corporate finance and business strategy in the MBA as well as the MFM program, both at Prashanthinilayam and Brindavan campuses, since 1998. He is also actively involved in his local and regional Sai Center activities, having served as the Center President, Education Coordinator, and U.S. North Central Region YA Advisor, YA standing for Young Adult. And both Lakshmi and Brother Paddy are proud parents of 2 young Sai adults, Priya and Rohit, who are both following in the footsteps of their parents with high achievement in personal and professional lives, and the Sai being the nucleus. On that happy note, Sai Ram, Sister Lakshmi and Brother Paddy, and welcome to Radio Sai.
Sai Ram, thank you for having us here today.
It's a pleasure for us. So, how did the Padmanabhans find Swami, and when? Let's begin with that story.
Well, probably that was one of the most eventful stories in our life. As a kid growing up, I had heard about Swami.
And where were you growing up?
It was in Chennai. Uh-huh. I grew up in Madras at that time.
Right.
And I had heard about Swami, and there were a number of my friends and their families. They were involved in going to Puttaparthi on a regular basis. But I grew up in a family where my parents were very spiritual, but visiting the temples and following the Hindu rituals was more the custom at home.
Mm-hmm. So more traditional.
It was more a traditional home following the Hindu traditions in a very strict way. In 1996, my father was took ill, and it was nearing his end, and he was admitted in the hospital. Lakshmi and I were visiting, and we spent hours sitting and talking to him. And one of the things he kept saying was, "It's time for me to go. I want to go home." So I kept asking him, "What do you mean by going home?" He said, "I want to go to my real home. I want to see him. I have a lot of questions to ask him." So in a funny way, I told my father, I said, "You know what, Appa, when you find him, can you come and tell me who he is? So I will know what to do." So he said, Yes, if I find him, I will come and tell you. Mm-hmm. The conversation ended there, and then a few weeks later, he passed away, and then we did the rituals, and we returned back.
To the U.S.?
To the U.S. A couple of weeks after we came back, we went to a friend's house and happened to meet Dr. Venkat Kanubadi, who is very actively involved in the super specialty hospital, and his wife, Janki. Lakshmi and I had gone to visit a friend of ours, and we got into a conversation, and Swami became a very important topic for discussion, and I found myself drawn to that, so was Lakshmi.
Where was this conversation?
This was in Fort Wayne in the U.S. And then he invited us, he and his wife invited us to come over to their house because the center, Sai Center, met at his home, which wasn't too far from our house. And until that moment, I hadn't even heard about it. And I say all that because there was a conversation I had with Swami on this, which kind of opened out a whole bunch of things for me. So he invited us, and at first I was reluctant to go. I had Lakshmi and the kids go. They went, came back, and they said, "You have to come." It was just an incredible experience. So the
next... Why did you say that, Lakshmi, though?
I honestly had such a draw. When Janaki talked to me about Swami in the conversation about 4 days prior, they met on Thursdays, I had known of Swami. In fact, I had seen Swami at the age of 6, and I was always very intrigued, and there was a power which I cannot explain, and I had this draw because I had had friends of mine also who were firm believers of Sati Sai Baba, and I've attended bhajans, but just like Paddy said, our home, we did very typical Hindu ritualistic kind of prayers, not Sati Sai Baba bhajans or anything like that. We were not opposed to it, but that's what we did. And
When
Janaki started talking about Swami, all I can say is maybe that was my time that he wanted me to be there, because when I went into their house and I saw this big picture of Swami and a small Ganesha, you know, that's not what I'm used to seeing, right? You always see all the different idols and everything that are much bigger and not a picture of Sati Sai Baba. And anybody who was assembled there referring to Swami as God, it was very unique for me, something that I had not anticipated, but still, as I said, there was peace, and when there was bhajans being sung, there was a certain draw for me.
So you came back and shared that?
I shared that experience, and I told Paddy, and I said, we should go there next Thursday together as a family.
I see.
And that's how it started for us. The first meeting encounter was on January 6th. Of 1997 with the Kanubadis, and exactly 5 days later, on the Thursday, we were back at the Sai Center in Fort Wayne.
And
I went there, and the first thing that struck me was when the bhajan was done, they were going to do the aarti. And they started doing aarti to Swami's picture. So up to that point, he to me was a good teacher. And he was a Swamiji, and that's how I looked at him.
Like a holy man.
Like a holy man. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly they were doing aarti, and then so in my eyes he elevated to a God stature. Because at that time, you know, I hadn't learned a lot about his teachings.
It didn't offend your sensibilities.
It did not. And there was something that intrigued me, and the interesting thing was when I was growing up as a kid, we would go for bhajans. There was an older lady who used to come and teach us bhajans. And a lot of the bhajans she had taught us was the ones that they sing in the Sai centers. And it's as if that young days came back. Because the next week we went, we were all sitting and practicing bhajans, including the kids. And we were there singing bhajans, and it just became a part of our life, right?
Very quick transition.
Yeah.
I would say it was a very good quick transition based on him wanting not just myself and the kids or just Paddy and the kids, but us as a family. That was the most phenomenal turn in our lives. I have to say that because that has changed our lifestyle a lot.
Because everything, the kids would get their homework all done, ready, waiting, and it was kind of a very routine thing.
Mm.
And I was surprised at how quickly it got evolved. But then my mind was working, and I said, okay, I've got to really dig deeper and find out. So I went ahead and ordered a whole bunch of books of people sharing their experience. And I got into this enormous reading mode.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was this great urge to come to Prashanthi Nilayam.
Mm-hmm.
So that December, right, we decided that we were...
1998 December.
1 year later. So we came here, and the kids, all of us, were excited coming here. We had no idea about Puttaparthi, Prashanthi Nilayam, what it was. And it so happened that both my mother and her mother decided to accompany us, right? So we all came together, and I mean, it was just right from the time, that time they used to have a flight coming from Chennai here, so we came on that. And my mother is in a wheelchair, and she is not able to walk. But when we landed there, it was as if there were two people waiting, and they helped put her on the wheelchair, carry her down. I came out, and there was a van, right? A Tata Sumo was there. I just asked him, says, yeah, I'll take you to Prashanthi Nilayam. Right, so my mother couldn't climb up on it, and he said, oh, I've got a stool. And it was almost like everything was planned, perfect.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I'm absorbing all this that's going on. We come in, and I was standing, and at that time, they didn't have this. I think they had it in the front, right across from
the accommodation office
was there. There was this huge line. I don't know, it just worked right through, and at the time the person there who was allocating the room, he asked me how many people are there, and I told him that I have my mother-in-law and my mother is on wheelchair. So he goes, oh, then I need to give you so he gives us a room on the ground floor, the two rooms are connected. It was just unbelievable. Six beds. There were six of us, it has six beds. So we went in there, just enjoying the moment. And then I came, like everybody else, I stood in line, we went in, and I was sitting way at the back, and then Swami showed up. And I looked at Swami, and there was this enormous feeling, I cannot even describe it. And then something happened to me that moment. I just had this inner thing that was urging me, there is a university here, there is a school here, you need to go. I just had this voice telling me that, right? So as soon as the darshan was over, I just got up. I asked a couple of sevadars and found my way to the campus.
Mm.
And then as I walked in there, I asked for the principal. And Professor Rao was the principal at that time. I walked into his office. I told him who I was. Then he said, I want you to meet somebody. His name is Dr. Radhaswamy, Professor Radhaswamy.
Yes.
He is teaching. Let him come. Why don't you sit in my office? So I sat there. We got talking, and it was almost like he and I just connected, right? About a half hour later, Professor Radhaswamy came in. We sat down, and right there, they started talking to me, and Professor Radhaswamy said, can you come and teach finance for our boys? So I said, I haven't prepared, but I am definitely happy to do that. So Professor Rao said, give me your resume. I said, I don't have a resume. So we wrote it on a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, let me go. We have to get permission for you to teach. So I will go and apply for that, and then we will let you know. So that conversation ended, and I came back. The following day, when we went for darshan in the afternoon, I was sitting way back, and then I just saw Radhaswamy sitting in the veranda looking at the crowd, and I kind of felt, okay, he was looking for me. So I walked up, and the sevadars were pushing, but somehow I connected with him. And then he said, we got permission for you to teach, so why don't you start teaching from tomorrow? And then he told me, I want you to teach the boys debt management and how do you optimize corporate debt. I mean, that's a pretty involved topic. But that evening, I didn't have textbooks. I just went and bought a notebook and started writing down what I wanted to lecture And I just couldn't believe. It was almost like there was a book in front of me because I had the whole lecture material written up in less than 2 hours.
Hmm.
And then I went, and that's how it started from the next day, right? So the first week, the first time we stayed, had this great experience of teaching. So when I got the when I got this opportunity to teach, Professor Radha Swami said, from tomorrow, you can come and sit with us, which was in the veranda. So I didn't think anything about it at that time. So the next day, I went in and I sat down next to them, and I started crying profusely because when I was I just remembered the conversation that when I was a kid, around 6 years, one time I was lying on, I was putting my head on my mother's lap and I was asking her a question, how does heaven look? And my mother described heaven to me as follows. She said, you will have a lot of people sitting very quietly in white dress and somebody with a red robe, that is God, will be walking around. This is what she explained to me. And she said, he would be talking to people. I never thought of it at that time, but when I sat there, everybody around me was wearing white dress, and I saw Swami walking. I felt I was sitting in heaven, and I just sobbed profusely. So Swami walked up, stood right there, no expressions on his face. He just looked at me, turned, and walked away. But that moment was just enormous. I just couldn't control my emotions for quite some time that day. And there were a lot of people around, but I continued to cry, right? And then I went on to teach. And after the last day of teaching was over, we were getting ready to leave. So at that time, yeah, go ahead.
While he was, Swami had given him that wonderful opportunity. He did it in such a way that because he got the opportunity, I, along with Priya and my mother-in-law and my mother, had this enormous opportunity for darshan.
Mm-hmm.
Even though my mother-in-law was in the wheelchair, she was sitting in the very last area in the end. And I had gone into the token line. And Priya was already standing there. My mother and I went and dropped my mother-in-law. And then by the time we came, they had already started giving out the tokens. And I just went and stood in one line because I had to be there. And it just so happened, I saw everybody started jumping. And they were so happy. Apparently, they picked whoever was in, picked token number one. And I did not know what the implication was. Just like the way he was absolutely... Mm-hmm. And he went and sat for me that moment, and people had given me some stories about how difficult it is. You may be very far away, but you'll still be able to see the orange dot. But for the fact that Swami gave us that first row seat, and I see the red carpet being rolled, that was just an incredible experience for me in the first darshan, coming to Prashanthi Nilayam, having gone to the center for 1 year, and having so much of anticipation, and getting that opportunity was just an incredible, incredible experience.
Mm, I can imagine. Brother Paddy, how did your mother come up with that description of heaven? I'm just curious.
I have no idea. I to this day.
Because
she
had never been to Parthi before that.
She had never been to Parthi. I had no idea. And then afterwards I went and told her that. And she was blank about it. She said, oh, I've told so many things to you, I don't remember all of it. Right?
But a mother's wisdom is uncanny.
But it was unbelievable. That's why I started. So to me today, even today, when I go to the veranda and when I go into the bhajan hall, to me that's heaven on earth. And I feel so different and so wonderful there. And it's a feeling you just cannot describe it. It was
for me, as my car drives through, as I drive into the Gopuram gate, I know I'm entering the gates of heaven.
Heaven, right.
And when you go into the Kulwant Hall, this is like the nucleus of the heaven.
Heaven,
my
yeah.
God.
Yeah.
Yes.
You get that feeling.
Yeah,
right?
All the time.
Yeah.
I just love that feeling.
It is incredible experience. And what was even more amazing for us is
while we were sitting, I was just looking at Swami and saying, Swami, it's so nice of you. And I gave him a letter, and he did take the letter. And he said, you gave us all this wonderful seat. But Amma is sitting in the wheelchair, and, you know, she's at the back. I want her to be able to, you know. And he took that letter, and I talked about Rohit was also. Rohit would get up at 3 and go, he was so enthusiastic. He'd be one of the first ones. It doesn't matter whether his line was 1 or 13, or he was so enthusiastic. Just so I said, I want him to also like the way you gave us the grace. You will not believe it. When we finish darshan, I'm going back to go pick up my mother-in-law from the wheelchair area, and she's not there. And I was really nervous, and I said, what happened? I put her here. And then, you know, it's so crowded, and finally I just kind of walked my way trying to find. And my mother-in-law was sitting. As Swami enters, somebody had actually held her hand and asked her, will you be able to hold my hand? One of the aunties, she had no idea who she was, but came and asked her, and she took her all the way to the ledge where Swami comes in, and she was sitting in the corner. And not only had she done that, she had put a beautiful shawl of hers on that spot and told me, this is her place till you leave.
Oh.
You go take her to breakfast. And that's how he took care of
her. So from that time, whenever my mother came with us, she always had that spot.
So she was able to sit there, and she also, and because she's unable to sit on the ground, she was able to put her feet down and sit comfortably enough that when she had to walk back, I could walk her back to her wheelchair. But she had the spot to be able to also have darshan of our beloved Swami.
As it was coming into the
So that's how our first trip was, just so much of love from Swami. And why I helped Paddy was when in the end, you know, for me, as I was giving all these letters and going into the bhajan room and everything, I wanted to see something for Paddy and what Swami did for him, and that too he did for him, making it totally visible for me, saying, listen, your prayers, I'm answering. I gave it to him, but you can also see it.
Mm-hmm.
Was just an incredible experience. So I want him to...
I see. So the last day we were getting ready to come in, and I finished the teaching, and both Professor Rao and Professor Radha Swami were very happy, and they were talking about, why don't you come back more frequently? So we were going through all of that. I felt very good. And then when I was coming, I saw Vedanarayan. So he said, today is your last day, isn't it? He said, yes. Out of the blue, he said, you know, you should take a rose flower and go sit in the front. Don't sit in the veranda. Sit with the boys in the front row. And then as Swami comes, offer the rose. He will bless it. Usually you raise it and offer it to him, and he will bless it. So that will be a good memory for you to keep. So I went and bought a rose from outside. I came back. And I told myself, okay, he always used to come to Professor Bhakya. He used to sit there, and Sudhir used to be sitting next to them. He would always come there, so I said, okay, I'm going to go sit there. So I sat next to Professor Bhakya, and Swami came. And it was almost like he walked right up to where I was, and I had the flower. He touched it, then I said, Swami, can I have a Pada Namaskar? He took a few steps back and said, yes. So that was the first time that I, full prostration position, I went and touched both his feet with my hands. And that to me was a turning point in my life, because I felt an electric current. I cannot describe it. And from that moment on, I think he has been everything to me. Everything.
And he made that very visible, because where I was sitting with Priya and my mother, I could see Paddy getting that Pada Namaskaram, and Swami, of course he's down, but Swami is raising his hands and blessing him. And there he was telling me too, listen, you asked, and I made sure that you are able to see that he's also got this wonderful opportunity, you know.
This was something very important, because after we were going, we were thinking about it, and we said, look, where we were less than a year ago, and look at where we are. Mm. And there was a lot of purpose and meaning to what we were doing.
Mm.
So this kind of nagged me for a while. Mm. And so the very first time when we had our interview, the very first question I asked Swami was, and that was in 2001, I asked Swami, I said, Swami, why did it take me 42 years to know you?
Mm-hmm.
And this is what he said, and that to me was enormously powerful. He said, I knew you. You didn't know me. And only when the time comes, you will know me. This is what he said. See, then it dawned on me that I was there with Sai devotees at some point in my life, a lot of my friends, but I never had the urge to go. And it's not about us deciding we are going to Swami. There is a time when he says it's time for you to come. Then I realized that this whole encounter I had and just knowing him and all of us being under his fold was a blessing. And it was orchestrated by him. So that kind of even drew us further into Swami's fold, right?
And I think the words that he used are going to answer a lot of people's questions who are coming to Swami after Mahasamadhi or are going to come to Swami in years and decades and centuries mm-hmm. to come. And they will always have that doubt. Why? Why did I come to Swami only now? Why not earlier? So as he told you, he knew each one of us. But we didn't know him, and when the time comes, we will know.
That
him.
Is the only time he reveals himself. So that was kind of the whole. But at that point, I did not realize when I left that time that he was now going to start cleaning me up into a transformed individual, because I didn't analyze myself to the extent I did after that to see the amount of bad habits I had and what I needed to self-correct myself. And that during the course of the next five, six years, through interactions, little by little, he kind of chipped at me and made me realize it on my own, right? And those experiences were enormous. It was several conversations where he would throw certain things and then make you reflect on it. And that journey after that point was enormous.
Mm-hmm. And what about you, Lakshmi?
So, I mean, as we said, I went with the children, but it was an amazing experience. As you asked me, what made you want to? There was, I cannot explain, but there was a draw that I wanted to go every Thursday. There was no two ways. And it was not just me, all of us wanting to go together. And like what Patty said, we started learning bhajans. And what was even more amazing was Rohit would want to only sing the bhajans that Swami sang. So we had the golden voice of God, that tape, and he would play, and each week he would memorize one of those bhajans. And so this happened, and as I said, we started going in January, and we were going every single Thursday to the bhajan, and then like Canada and U.S., we have the spring break when the children were in the month of March. And we had taken a spring break and we left and went to Florida. And it so happened that we went on a Thursday and we started driving towards from the airport towards our destination. And as we were driving to our vacation spot, all of us kind of looked at each other and said, oh, it's 7:30, it's bhajan time. You know, because we had missed bhajans in
the first time we missed bhajans
in the center. And so throughout our drive from Miami to Cape Canaveral, we were all singing bhajans, taking turns and singing bhajans. So if you asked us why, what, I don't know. But we just, Swami drew us and we just started doing that. And this became, and of course we started reading about all of us start and also, one of the big things, we were all young parents and our children were, you know, in the younger age, 9 years old and 11 years old. And as a mother, my big concern was, you know, you're raising your children in the United States and they're soon going to become teenagers. What is it, you know, that how do we raise them? How do we make them, you know, hold the values that we were raised with? And that's been an annoying question for us. And always I felt that Swami was extremely gracious, bringing us at a time into His fold so that the children were there in SSC and those values were taught by Swami through His SSC program. So He knew exactly when to bring us and when to get us. And that was the biggest change for me, because when I started looking at all the SSC material and all the parenting thoughts that Swami had shed on us, I began to realize how much we had to change and how children look at us and emulate us. And because for them, we are their role models. And if you don't set the right example, they are not going to follow it. And so for us, that became a big, big draw. And I can't thank Swami enough for having brought us at the right time. So that whole parenting, I felt I didn't do anything, but always. And my prayer to Him, sincere prayer to Him was, I know, Swami, you gave us those jewels. I don't want to send them back tarnished. I want them to sparkle, just like the way you would want them to. And He has guided us to do that, and I can't thank Him enough for that. Mm-hmm. Swami was extremely kind to us, and many a time I have wondered, you know, we read Swami is a mother, Swami is a father. Is that really true? In what way? And so when in 2001, when we were here together, Swami was extremely gracious, gave us everything that we could have asked for, and treated us in terms that nobody would treat us. He showered us with love, put us in Shanti Bhavan. We were sitting very comfortably, and He put us and gave us all the treatments. And then when we went inside, I asked Swami a question. I said, what did we do, Swami, to deserve it? And Swami had just one sentence for me. He said, won't your mother do this for you? I just was crying, because that was what it is. He said, only a mother knows what a child needs. And He was extremely gracious then, and He says, I did what only a mother would do. And the other thing He also explained at that time, he said, Atitha Devo Bhava. And so then I have been learning that from that particular statement. I said, see how Swami treated me? That's what I should do. And when He said Atitha Devo Bhava, I think every time somebody comes to my place, it is my utmost responsibility to treat that person exactly the way Swami treated me. And I take that as a lesson from Swami.
Because Atithi Devo Bhava means guest is God.
Exactly. Is God. So how He treated us is what He expects us to treat everybody in this world. So that was a big lesson for me. And I thank Swami for having given me that opportunity and have treated me so well, and also teaching me what I should be doing, and the great lesson I learned from Him.
And Brother Paddy, you spoke about this process of fine-tuning or chiseling that began, and you did a lot of introspection and course correction.
Yes. Would you care
to share some details with us?
Yeah, you have a lot of interactions, but at the end, there are like four interactions that I had with Him, very short, but they had a very lasting impact on me.
Mm-hmm.
And they formed the basis for me to self-evaluate myself, do a self-audit of myself, and I started to clean myself, because at that time I didn't know how much I had to clean myself to be worthy of calling myself a devotee of Bhagawan Sri Sathya Sai Baba, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the four, these are just an enormous one. The first one, I always thought that now that Swami has given me an opportunity to come and teach there and be there, etc., I thought, okay, you know, wow, this is great. So then I told myself, okay, I want Swami to come and ask me, where are you from? And I want to tell Swami I am from you to establish the relationship. Okay? So I would sit in our, altar room in the house, and I would like rehearse that Swami is coming to me and how I would give the answer and all of that. So I'm fully prepared for this, right? So at that time, I had actually moved to Chicago, and I was working with PricewaterhouseCoopers in Chicago. So I came, we all came here, and I remember this day very vividly because I walked in, and in those days, the Ganesha statue was there, and then behind that, the faculty used to sit. And so I went and sat next to Professor Radha Swami and Professor Ramurti. These are two of the finest people I believe I've met in my life. And I shared a lot of great moments, and I learned a lot from them. So I was sitting right next to them. So Swami came right out of the interview room, and he walked up to me, and then he looked at me, and he asked the question, "Where are you from?" And in spite of all the rehearsals I had done, the answer I gave him was, "I am from Chicago, Swami." So Swami walked past me, and there was another gentleman who was sitting to the right of me. He looked at him and said, "Where are you from?" And that gentleman looked at Swami and said, "I am from you, Swami." So again, I was like, I felt very bad, and I told Professor Radha Swami, I said, "I gave the wrong answers to Swami." So Radha Swami said, "No, he made you give the right answer." So I said, "But he gave the right answer, the answer I wanted to give." So he said, he told me, he said, "Why don't you go talk to him after the darshan? You'll know why he gave the answer." See, he sets it up for you, and he's also got a person telling you what to do. So I waited, and after the darshan was over, the first thing I did was I grabbed him and I said, "Look, this is what happened." He said, "Yes, I noticed." And I said, "You gave the answer I wanted to give, so I want to find out what." And so we went and went into the South Indian canteen, had a cup of coffee, and we started talking. So he was a very long-time devotee of Swami, and he was a registrar in one of the northern universities, and he had come there. So he told me his experiences, and then he told me, he said, "You know, when I got appointed as a registrar and I came, Swami materialized a golden pen for me. And then he said, anything you sign with this will become law." He said, "Padmanabhan, I was so afraid when I heard that, I put the pen in my pocket, I went home and put it on the feet of Swami's picture, and I never touched it." Because he said, "I didn't want to sign something that was wrong." Right? He's explaining this to me. I'm sitting there going, "Oh my God, this is why you said you are from him, and I said I am from Chicago." Because that frame of mind where I was, if Swami had given me that pen, I would have freely used to sign everything, right? Because the maturity wasn't there in me. Then I came to Radha Swami and I told him, I said, "You know, I understand why this conversation happened," right? So he told me, "Remember this, when he asks you a question, he's asking you a question for you to learn. And he's going to make you give him the right answer." And he said, that's what happened, right? So that was one huge moment here where I just started analyzing, right? The second one, this was, in 2001. One morning when we all woke up, all of them, the children, herself, they all had dreams of Swami calling and talking and calling us for interview and all of that except me, right? So I was pretty upset, and I said, "Look, Swami loves all of you. He comes in your dream. He doesn't come in mine." Believe it or not, that day we were called, and as I walked into the room, the very first thing he did, he looked at me and he said, "I come in your dreams, but you snore so loudly you don't see me."
Oh dear.
My goodness, right? And I was like shocked, but at that time I didn't understand what he was telling me. It took me several years. It was kind of a nice thing, and every time I said this, people would laugh. But that was a huge message he had communicated to me. He says, "I am there, I am teaching you, I am saying, you are not listening to me, you are doing what you want to do." That was the message. But it took me 2-3 years to understand that, right? It was just, so that was the second one that he told me, oh my goodness, he is not joking here, he is telling me, "You are not listening to me when I talk because you are so self-involved in yourself that you are not listening, correcting, and growing," right? So that was the takeaway for me from there. So it kind of tells you, my goodness, you need to do a lot more. It's not just going to Puttaparthi and teaching in the school and feeling good and going to the center and singing bhajans and getting into discussions about Swami. You got to start living His teachings and practice it in your everyday life. So I'm getting the incident, right? Then the third time I was sitting there, he came up and he said, how many kinds of knowledge are there? So now with the training Radha Swami had given, I didn't want to say anything. So you're looking. So Swami said there are four kinds of knowledge. He said, the first one is bookish knowledge. That's what the boys have. It's very easy to get, right? Then he said the second kind of knowledge is general knowledge. General knowledge is knowledge of the environment. Atma permeates the environment. So general knowledge is atmic knowledge. That's what he said, right? Then he said the third kind of knowledge is discriminatory knowledge. And he said, as your general knowledge becomes better, your discriminatory knowledge will become better. And then he said the fourth kind of knowledge, which is the most difficult form of knowledge, which I like the most, is practical knowledge. And then he said, you have to practice spirituality in the context of your daily life. And then he said, go and teach the boys practical things. Right? It just hit me, because here was a command, right? First he told me, you still haven't come to me, which was the first dialogue. The second one was, you're so full of yourself that I keep talking to you and you don't even see
me.
And then you feel bad that I'm not there for you. And then the third one was, practice what I am teaching you in the practical context of your life, and you're not doing that. So that was the third one, right? And then the fourth one was, I always felt I spend a lot. So I was starting to transform. I was starting to get into doing self-analysis of myself, going back every night, looking at the progress I have made. Slowly, inch by inch, I was able to kind of see what are the ways to improve myself. So it became a part of me. Am I doing the right thing? Am I saying the right thing? You know, and that became a very integral part of what I was doing, and I could start seeing some changes.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm the kind of person who's completely immersed in the work that I do, and I have a tendency to just focus on it. And as a result of that, I felt guilty that I did not devote sufficient time to doing any public service activities or going and doing some seva work and so forth. So a question that I was asked Swami was to get some guidance. I am not able to do, is it wrong? So he came back and he said two things, which was another huge moment where it changed my life. He said, first serve the family,
mm-hmm.
then serve the community, then serve the country. That's the way you serve God, right? So serve the family, serve the community, serve the country, and if you do that, you serve God. Then out of the blue he came and he said, your work is your worship.
Mm-hmm. That answered your doubt.
Huh?
That answered your doubt.
That answered my doubt. Mm-hmm. Then he said, do good actions always and do your best. And make all your actions as offering to God. And once you offer it to God, don't expect anything coming out of your action. Right? This is not exactly how the words he put, but it was, your work is worship, do actions always, and do your best. All your actions are offering to God. Right? And then he said, you shouldn't expect anything back. It took me a while to understand it, and then I realized that the work I'm doing, if I do it right, and every time I do my job and make it as an offering to the Lord, I give it my 150%, and then don't expect anything to come out of it. It's offered to the Lord, and then it happens. See, when I got into that mode, and when I stopped having expectations on the work that I did, the whole meaning for life changed, because I was no longer waiting for people to compliment me on the work I did or what their reactions were, and other people's opinion of what I was doing was no longer important to me. What was important to me was every time I do something, I give 200% and do my very best.
Mm-hmm.
And then the outcome of it I never started considering.
So when you brought in the Psi factor into your professional life, was there an impact, positive or otherwise, on your performance as a professional?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's what I was coming to. When I didn't have any expectations coming out of my work and I focused on my very best, suddenly I felt that the reaction people having towards me was very different. I was less confrontational.
I see.
I was not a threat to anyone. I was there to do my job and leave. And the feedback I was getting was much better, and people were reacting and working with me. And I found it very easy to work, and I felt totally involved with the teams I was working with. In the past, that was not the case, because always there was an expectation that you do the work, you need to get promoted, you need to get this, you need to get all that went away. And it took me, this transformation of myself happened in 2007. And I look back and I say, I wish it had happened early on in my life.
It was so liberating, isn't it?
It's all, yes. But then it is also, it kind of evolves with time.
Yeah, it's the process.
Yeah, yeah. And once I got all of this, then the last couple of trips I came here, it was some of the most beautiful moments I had, because I would just sit there and watch Swami, you know, and he was frail, but the darshans coming in, I really started to enjoy being in the presence of the Lord, right? And I never asked him for anything after that. Never. Never asked him anything after that.
You were at home and you were at
ease. I was at home and I was very peaceful. Now, there's just another thing I want to add about giving letters to Swami, right? We always wonder, does Swami read the letter? How is he going to respond? But yet we all write letters and give them, right? And there are only two things I've really written in a letter asking Swami. One was, I wanted to have a robe of his so we can put it in the chair at home. Right? That was one request. And the other request, when I used to read, in his younger days, he would sit down and do bhajans, and people would be sitting around him singing songs. So I wanted to have that experience of him leading a bhajan, and I was singing. I was repeating the words after him. Those are the two requests I had sent. And you will not believe it. When we had one of our moments with him, he sat there and he led a bhajan, and it was Lavasmai form. So I was sitting right there under his feet singing. And then when that was over, we were kind of leaving. He stopped, he went inside, he came back, took a robe, and threw it across the room into my hands. Right? So you write something in a letter, and he takes it, you make sure that it happens. So both those he fulfilled. Both those he fulfilled.
How blessed.
That was incredible.
Totally. So Lakshmi, he said that, Paddy said that Swami explained how a seva has to begin by taking care of your family, then community and country. Did you, as a wife and your children, experience a change in his spousal bonding and parenting style?
Yes, I would say definitely yes, because one of the things, in fact, I was also going to say this, because we were, both of us were working, and Paddy was also traveling a lot because of his job, and the children were, getting older, and in the grades they would have homework, and so Thursdays we are at bhajans, and then you have all these service activities on Saturday. So we had, and we are trying to balance, and there would be oftentimes we would be pushing each other, and you're rushing and you're getting upset that you're not able to do this or do that, but I don't want to go today because I have this going on. So we realized, once Swami explained this to us, that it was not necessary that every single activity that you need to be part of. There are things that are important, so you take care of your life at home. And that definitely helped ease our situation at home, because you're not getting confrontational and saying, no, we got to do this and yet run to this. Mm. Because in the process, we were not enjoying and giving our 100% because you're doing it because you felt that you had to do it. But that's not what Swami wants.
And that
wants.
Really adds to your stress level.
That adds to the stress
exactly.
level. But it and becomes natural to you. You're giving a lot more than you
And that we realize. And that's what it was in terms of how that changed. And you asked, another, in terms of the professional part of it, when he said, I had asked him a question. I talked to Swami and I said, Swami, I don't feel like I'm patient at all. What do I do? You know, I mean, oh, I get angry fast, Swami.
In the interview?
In the interview room, I had one of the questions I had raised to Swami. Says, Swami, how do I control my anger? Swami just looked at me and he said, practice the three P's, he said. Patience, purity, and perseverance. Both at home and at in the professional level. And I constantly think about that. I'm not saying I have conquered every single thing, but that always comes back in, you know, at the back of your mind. And especially in the job front, I want to say when you're patient and you're self-confident and you do and deliver your best, you know the results are there, not because you did it, but you offered it completely and surrendered it to him. And that's when it happens, and he knows when. And in that context, one of the things that I wanted to share was there was this incident where I was, you know, I'd be frustrated that I'm doing all this work, I'm not getting promoted, I'm not getting the due recognition.
And you were working with this largest defense contracting firm in the U.S.
Correct, and I was extremely unhappy. I mean, in my own mind, you know, my monkey mind is telling me, no, 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 this is not enough. So I started going and interviewing elsewhere. And I had a job opportunity that came up. So I went back and I interviewed and they gave me everything. You know, they started talking to me about how they would love to have me. And, you know, all these promises were being made. And they wanted me to join at the earliest. So I said I would give it consideration and I came back. And that night, I had a dream from Swami saying that don't be lured by all these things. I know what is right and the future on that path is dark. That's exactly how it was. It's a black future is how I got the dream and the vision. And I didn't realize, but I talked to him about it and I said, you know what? I didn't get this positive vibration in this dream, so I don't think I'm going to accept this opportunity. So I turned down the opportunity, and I went back, and I had initially actually talked to my immediate supervisor at work and said that this opportunity has come, and I'm considering it very strongly. So they had talked amongst themselves and he said, no, we would not like to lose you, so I want you to reconsider everything. But anything, all that happened and I turned it down and I didn't go back. I said I was not going to take it. And within 3 months, I came to find out that the company, had I taken the opportunity, was going to entirely fold. They were this huge company in the Fort Wayne area. And they were going to close down. They had completely lost their bearing in the market. And had I taken that job, I would have been jobless. So they had closed it down. So I didn't have that vision, but that was Swami's patience teaching me and also have faith in me. Those were two very important lessons for me in the professional field. And again, another 3 months down the road, I was promoted to supervisor. So I got what I wanted and what I had complained about. And from then, that was my big lesson saying, you do what you can and do your ultimate. And also Swami often says, which is very difficult even to this date for a lot of us, is he says, you completely surrender everything to me. I'll take it from there. So at least when you make that attempt and you offer your day and your work and your every being in existence to him, he takes you and guides you through that whole process. And that's been an experience that I have faced always throughout my throughout my career and throughout my life.
Can you share an experience in this regard, and especially in terms of your faith and your profession, where you had to practice the three P's and you came through?
I want to tell you about most recent episode. In 2015, I went through shoulder surgery on my right hand. It was a surgery that happened in September, and normally within 4 months you should be able to move, and being primarily right-handed, I felt that, you know, once I had the surgery, that's how the surgeon had put it to me, saying that once the surgery is done and you go through your exercises, you will get full use of your hand. And I thought to myself, I said, okay, this is my right hand. I'm primarily right-handed. Yes, I'll go through. But 4 months down the road, my hand was terrible. I could not move. I couldn't do anything. And I was extremely nervous, thinking to myself, I'm so dependent. What is going to happen to me? And I cried to Swami and I said, Swami, this is not what I expected. I know you know what is right for me, but I'm really at a loss, because I don't know where I'm going to get head. And it was in this context, when I was having a lot of pain, that in one of the conversations, Professor Sudhir Bhaskar called me and he says, how is your shoulder feeling? So I told Professor Sudhir that, you know, I'm not doing well. I'm having so much pain and I don't know what to do. And I had gone back to the doctor, and the doctor had reordered an MRI, and now he tells me, oh, you had a partial tear. Now it's a full thickness tear to your shoulder. You have to have another surgery. And so I was at a loss, and he told me, Professor Sudhir said, you know, I have somebody that I want you to talk to, and, you know, I'm sure you'll be able to at least ask him the right question, and he has a lot of experience in this area. And again, this is all when you talk to Swami and you are, you know, asking him for answers, he has his instruments he sends to you. And this is in twofold. One, his instrument, and also now in this context of post-samadhi, where you'd say, okay, Swami is not here in his physical form, but he's still answering your prayers. And he's answering your questions and doubts in your mind. And that's where I got to meet and got introduced to Dr. Chari, who has come here and has served Swami immensely.
Dr. Vardachari.
So I wrote this very long letter to Dr. Chari, and within a minute after he had read, he responded to me immediately, and he says, Lakshmi, just give me a call. I'll talk to you. So I gave him a call, and I spoke to him, explained what I was feeling, and he told me, he said, now what you're considering, you have to have a surgery done, but he had recommended I go and see somebody else, not the original doctor I had seen. And I had gotten the same feedback to go back to a different surgeon. And I went back, and the surgeon happens to have trained under a person who Dr. Vardachari knew extremely well. Mm-hmm. So he said, go back, and I'm very confident you are seeing this doctor, and he has trained very well, because I know the person who he has trained under. You should be fine. Go for it. Put your faith in Swami and do it. And as if I needed reassurance, that same day after Dr. Chari said that, I go randomly to the post office, and somebody in the counter is sitting there, and she was, you know, a little tired, I think. She was limping. And so I just spoke to her. I said, oh, you look like you are limping. Is something wrong? She said, oh, no, it's just been a long day. But then I said, oh, I'm going through, you know, pain, aches and pains, and I can understand how it is you're feeling. And I told her that I'm going to have shoulder surgery, just out of the blue. She was some stranger. But she didn't say, oh, she said, where are you having your shoulder surgery done? So I told her, this is where I'm going to get done. So she just comes back. Oh, it's amazing, because she said, I had 4 ligaments torn. I had a big, long tear. It was a full tear. And I went to the same surgeon, and today I'm doing extremely well. So here was 2 incidences right there that Swami is reassuring me, here, go back. Mm. So I had my right hand, right shoulder reoperated, and this time around, I'm able to move.
By
the other doctor.
The one that Dr. Vardhachari
also recommended to me and said, yeah, you go, put your full faith. And so here is my answer to Swami's patience and perseverance, and have faith, and you go with a pure heart, it will happen. And that's what has happened to me now. Mm-hmm. And not once, he reassured me multiple times. And even post-samadhi, he's there. He's watching over. It does not matter if he's here in physical form or not. He's always looking over us.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
IST Indian Standard Time. Dear listeners, Sai Ram, and once again a warm welcome to today's Thursday Live. This is the segment Morning Glory, and I am Raghu from Team Radio Sai. Well, dear listeners, till now we listened to a conversation with Mr. Paddy Padmanabhan and Mrs. Lakshmi Padmanabhan. And in conversation with them was Radio Sai's Karuna Munshi, and this conversation came to you as a segment of our radio series Tryst with Divinity, in which we listen to experiences of Swami's devotees' life with Swami. In fact, dear listeners, let me tell you that there are 200 such conversations recorded in our website, radiosai.org, and you can listen to it at your leisure whenever you want by downloading it from our website, radiosai.org. Okay, it's now time for the Radio Sai Bhajan Request program. Well, let me tell you, dear listeners, I have got another 15 minutes only to end this segment. So I'll play a couple of bhajans during these 15 minutes, which has been requested by a few listeners. Well, to start with, I'll play the bhajan Aruna Ramana Sri Sai Deva. And this bhajan has been requested by Mr. Pratap Makodia from Bhavnagar, Gujarat. And following this bhajan will be the bhajan Omkara Rupini Jananima, requested by Miss Lalita Gyaneshwar from Pune. And after this bhajan, we listen to the bhajan Ganga Jatadhar Gauri Shankar, requested by the listener Shravan Kumar. So today I'll play these three bhajans. In fact, dear listeners, I have got a dozen requests from you all. And don't worry, don't get disappointed. I will play it for you maybe in the next Thursday, next Morning Glory, or in one of the Thursdays which will be coming. Since at 11 o'clock, the Radio Thursday Live baton will be taken by Brother Prem for the next segment, that is Radio Sai Answering Booth. So let's listen to these three bhajans right now, and at the end of the third bhajan, you will be joined by Brother Prem for the next segment of today's Thursday Live, Radio Sai Answering Booth. So with this, I offer this segment Morning Glory at Swami's Divine Lotus Feet, and I take your leave, and I will join you again next Thursday at 9:40. Happy listening. Stay tuned.
Shesha Ramana Sadgurudeva
Shesha Ramana Sadgurudeva
Shesha Ramana Sadgurudeva
Shesha Ramana Sadgurudeva
Aruna आनंद देवा
गुरु हे सतचित आनंद देवा
आनंद देवा श्री साई देवा
आनंद देवा श्री साई देवा
आनंद देवा श्री साई देवा
आनंद
Shesha Ramana Sadgurudeva
Shesha Ramana Sadgurudeva
Aruna Ramana Shri Gurudeva
Aruna Ramana Shri Gurudeva
Bava Bhaya Harana Shri Sai Deva
Bava Bhaya
ब्रज दल नयना